God,
grant us the ability to accept things thy cannot change, courage to change the things thy can, and wisdom to know the difference.
All right, tonight is our 40-minute speaker, Pat from Mission Viejo.
Good evening, I'm an alcoholic and my name is Pat. I'm grateful to be sober, I'm grateful to be here. I want to welcome the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, I want to welcome you and I want to let you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the single most important thing in my life today. And, you know, not when I got here, it definitely wasn't, you know, on October 23rd, 2002. I did not want to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so if you don't want to be here, welcome. You know, and I want to welcome the alcoholic and the addicts. I always like those guys. Welcome. The visitors, welcome to the meeting. And thank you, Carla, for asking me to speak. And I think you said Cole referred me, right? So if I suck, you can blame him over there. And I'm really grateful to be sober. You know, people ask you to speak, and I think, why? You know what I mean? Why? Like, my grueling story, you know what I mean? If you had to live in my shoes, you wouldn't want to be sharing it, you know? And because there's a lot of shame attached to it, you know? And if you're sitting here and you feel shame because of your drinking and using, welcome. You know, I hope that you feel that way. I don't know about you. They say alcohol is a great persuader, and so is pain, right? You know? And my pain usually comes from shame, you know? I'm grateful to be sober. I love my life today. I absolutely love my life today. And, I used to say I don't dress like this normally, but I woke up this morning and put a tie on to go to work, which is unusual. Because when I got sober on October 23rd, 2002, I was standing on the corner of 6th in Los Angeles on Skid Row, you know, maybe 10 years prior, I was standing on that same street corner going to a rave. You know, those days were over, and now I'm standing on Skid Row, and I'm 98 pounds. I hadn't showered in 6 months. I was up roughly 21 days. I hadn't eaten in that amount of time. I had two shoes, only one had a sole. I kind of stood in the corner, and I went, and I thought I was an antenna. I was transferring very important information from the human beings to the aliens. I was really important, you know what I mean? And they needed me, you know? And I remember standing in the corner on Skid Row, and I'd watch the guy in his business suit and his briefcase going to work, and I'd think, what a lame. I mean, look at that guy, you know, and with all that alcoholic arrogance and all that judgment, you know, and I'm not a God guy. You know, if you're new and you're not a God guy or God girl, welcome. You know, I would see the devil and his troops, and they'd follow me wherever I went, you know, and I'd hear voices in my head, and they'd tell me who to do things to and where to go. And the good church people would bring me a brown bag with food in it, you know, and I remember being excited about that, about getting some food, and I would just sit there and shake, and they'd pull out this book and want to read it to me, and I would tell them where they can go with their God, and I'd throw the apple at them, and I'd walk by the church, and I'd kick over their signs, you know, and I'd throw rocks through their windows during their Sunday service, and I'd tell them where they can go with their God, you know, today I thank God for my sobriety. It's an absolute miracle to come from where I came from on October 23rd, 2002, to stand here and have a conversation. You know, and if you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. This room is actually a lot of fun for me to be in. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and the young people back then was my mom. You know, and I was a kid, and I'd come here with my Michael Jackson leather pants on, and my gloves and my bracelets, and I'd break dance on this floor right here during the young people's dances. So it's kind of whatever. It's weird, right? So it's kind of interesting to be here. I broke break dance right there, you know. And I grew up in AA, you know what I mean? And it's important for me to let you know what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today, you know. And And I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom got sober when I was 11 months old, you know. And if knowledge had anything to do with alcoholism, I'd have never taken my first drink. You know, I could sit in the rooms, I'd come to meetings, and I'd recite chapter 5, and I'd recite the 12 traditions, I'd hold hands at the end of the meeting, and I'd go, keep coming back. And I was like a little token boy for AA, you know, and I'd run around the meeting, and I'd come back in, and the old-timers would tell me, we're saving this seat right here for you, you know, and I had no clue what they meant, you know what I mean, and there's my seat, you know, and I'd come in, and I'd hang out with you, and I'd get bored with you, and I'd hang out with you, and you know, I'd hang out with everyone in AA, and the women in AA would be like, oh my God, he's so cute, can I have him for the weekend? My mom's like, sure, go ahead, you know, and whitewater rafting, I'm going, I'm in San Francisco, they're buying me clothes, like, I'm filled with so much love, you know, and I've met some of these women since I've gotten sober, and they're like, oh my God, your mom let me have you she had 7 days sober, pretty much, you know, and you know, there I am with a newcomer woman, you know, and for the weekend. And I have a 7-year-old. I wouldn't let him go with half of you in this room. So AA was probably different way back then, you know, because I'd see a guy fall right out of his chair, go into a grand mal seizure, flop around, and me and my friends would laugh at him. Look at that guy over there. We didn't know he was going into withdrawal. You know, my mom would bring women home and they'd detox on our couch, and I'd watch what alcoholism did. I'd watch the paramedics come and take women off to the hospital, you know. If alcoholism had anything to do with love, I'd have never taken my first drink. I mean, the love that I feel in this room tonight was the love that I was raised with, you know, and I could feel it in this room tonight, you know. But my mom is a blackout drinker, you know, and my mom didn't even know she was pregnant till she was in labor, you know. You know, my mom's in labor and she's, you know, there, and the doctor's like, you need to name him. And she's like, name what, you know, and her name's Patty, so she named me Patrick so she wouldn't forget, you know. you know, some guy tonight said, oh, I came to see your mom speak. Sorry, it's me, you know. And that happens quite often. And that's fine, you know, because I remember I'd tell my mom, I'm not going to AA because I don't want to be your son, you know. And so growing up, like my mom, you know, being a blackout drinker, like I'll never know who my dad is. It's kind of weird, right? And for all I know, it could be the cable guy. It's like, bow, bow, chicka, bow, now. And I can tell you that I can laugh at that kind of stuff today. You know what I mean? Growing up, it wasn't funny. You know what I mean? I can tell you that I suffer from the spiritual malady of alcoholism long before I ever took my first drink. You know, I remember my mom put me in, you know, with boys and girls club basketball team. I remember one time I jumped up, caught the ball, and threw it in the hoop, and I was so excited. I was like, yeah, I made a point, you know, and it was the wrong hoop. We were on defense, you know. You know, my mom put me in baseball, and I loved baseball, you know what I mean? I also suffer from lazy ass, you know what I mean? I love baseball because the coach put me in the right field. You know, there's always a couple head bobbing. You know, I was a right field kid too. You know, yeah. I mean, the best way I can describe myself as a little kid, like I smell like syrup and poopy pants. You know what I mean? And I'm awkward and I'm weird. I'm just like out in right field, like, you know what I mean? You know, and I'm just hoping. I'm like, please don't hit it out here. You know what I mean? You know, not too many lefties on the team. You know, and I probably had ADD. I don't know if I did, but like. I'm like looking for the long grass thing, you know what I mean? Because someone told me that if I found it, I could make a wish. And I'm all the way in left field looking for another wish. I just want another life, you know what I mean? And I remember the coach yelling, get the other side of the field, kid. And I'm like, huh? You know, and I'm back on right field. And I remember one time I'm standing on second base, and I'm standing there absolutely terrified. Because I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? I don't even know how the hell I got here, you know? And I'm looking around, and all of a sudden, the kid cracked a line drive, and I ran back to first base, you know? Yeah, it was like a triple play, you know what I mean? And I remember walking in the dugout, and all my teammates are running out, and what I hear them telling me is, you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good. Now, none of them are saying that, but that's what my head's saying. And I remember looking at my mom that day, and my mom's standing there, oh, so proud of her boy, you know? And she wasn't proud because I got a triple play, but she was proud that I was playing the game of baseball. And I remember looking at my mom that day saying to myself, if I would have had a dad, that had never happened. And I can tell you that I would take that for the rest, all the way long into Alcoholics Anonymous, up until about 9.5 years, which I'd be able to get to, you know what I mean? But that hole deep inside, there was nothing ever good enough. You know, if I had a dad teach me this, if I had a dad teach me that, if I had a this and if I had a that, you know. And I remember at 9 years old, I was at the hospital meeting at Laguna Beach. It was a Saturday night. I was me and all my little friends, and these kids pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And I didn't know what alcohol was going to do to me or for me. I didn't go, oh, whoopee, I'm going to get drunk. I was nine, you know. And these kids were picking this bottle, and that bottle went around. And I remember just, like, standing, like, terrified, like, oh, my God, you know. And they took a drink, and I thought, well, I've got to take a drink, too. So the bottle came around, and I took a big old pull off that bottle. And I don't know what happened the first time you drank tequila, but I spit that stuff out. Like, you know what I mean, all over their feet, you know. And once again, you're a failure, a loser, you're no good. You know, I remember that bottle going back around. I remember just talking to myself, hold it down, you know. The bottle came around, I took a big pull off that bottle, and I held it down. And I can tell you the effect that alcohol has on this alcoholic body was all that fear went away. For the first time in my life, at that moment, I felt like I connected to those kids. For the first time in my life, I felt like I was equal to, I was right size. It's like all of a sudden, I was like the cool kid, you know what I mean? All of a sudden, everyone was telling me I had an old soul. They're like, oh, he's got an old soul. I'm like, yeah, pass it over here. You know what I mean? And that old soul deal was going to give me what I wanted, you know? And everybody had a good time giving the 9-year-old the big 40 bottle, you know, this little hand, you know, and I'd hold it with two hands. And I didn't become a daily drinker at 9 years old, you know, but by the time I was 11, a guy handed me a joint. And I can tell you that I wasn't. That day, I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to be speaking in San Clemente in 2014. Can't be smoking that marijuana, you know what I mean? And I just was like, yeah, you know. And I remember smoking that thing, and I remember laughing. I was on the floor rolling. I mean, I was having a good old time, you know. And then I, like, remember the D.A.R.E. program, you know, and they'd come show us the drugs, you know what I mean? And they're like, if you smoke this, bad stuff's going to happen, you know. That day, I'm like, ain't nothing bad happening to me, you know what I mean? I'm having a good time. And quickly equate that authority lie. Moms lie, teachers lie, police lie. Everybody lies. Everyone's a liar, you know. And that's at 11 years old, you know. And it's kind of hard to get booze at mom. She's going to AA, you know. And by that time, my mom's working in treatment. She's in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's sponsoring all these women. She's speaking everywhere, right? And I'm just getting started, you know. And so I can't get booze at my mom's, but all my friends are getting booze, and they're pouring it all in one big jug, and we're just drinking, you know what I mean? And I got a root canal at 14 years old. I think I was about 15 years old. And at that time, I was living in Mission Viejo, and I was listening to Eazy-E, NWA, Ice Cube, right? We know who those guys are. And I live in Mission Viejo. It's an important piece of my story. I live in Mission Viejo, and they're telling us that this music's influential, and we're like, what? Influential? What are you talking about? Now, I'm wearing size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up, you know what I mean? I got like a 5XL sweatshirt on. I'm walking like, you know, womp, womp, you know, with the limp, you know. People be staring at me like, and I'm like, what are you staring at, you know? And look, the clown in front of us, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm drinking Colt 45 out of a brown paper bag, you know. I'm pouring beer in the curb for the dead homies. And we don't have any dead homies, but we're getting ready for some. I'm on my way to get a root canal with my homie in the back of the bus, because that's where homies sit, you know. And I'm from Mission Viejo. And I reached my hand in my pocket, and I pulled out four hits of LSD. And I'm like, hey, man, you want to eat these? He's like, sure, you know. He wasn't going to get a root canal. I was, you know. And I ate two hits of acid right about an hour before I was sitting in the chair of the dentist, you know. And I'm sitting there about an hour in, right? Yeah, we know what happens then. Fucking tools are bending. I'm like, yeah, right? And I'm just waiting for that mask, you know what I mean? And the dentist comes up and he gives me that mask, and I look at him complete seriousness, I'm like, you need to turn the nitrous level up and the oxygen level off, you know? And the dentist is looking at me like kind of cockeyed, and I'm thinking to myself, we just stole your tank last week, dude, you know? And I remember that it's like a bow wow wow when this went out, you know what I mean? And I was going to chase that bow wow for a long time, you know what I mean? And I remember coming to thinking, man, I want to go back to the dentist, you know? And that's just how it is, 15 years old. It's like more, more, more. You know, my mom found a bag of weed in the house, and she said, hey, I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my son's not going to get high in my house. And so I just decided to hide it better, you know, and so I'm not going to stop, you know. And me and my little homies, it was Friday night jump night in the park, and the way our jump night worked was we'd be drinking Colt 45, and then your name would get called, and your friends would beat you up, you know, and that was fun. And I'm like the littlest kid, you know what I mean? I like have big friends. And I got a big bar, rah, 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 talk a lot of crap, right? And then someone wants to beat me up, and then my friends beat him up. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. And so it's Friday night jump night in the park, and they call my last name. Well, the night day before, I got a stun gun, you know, and then they call my name, and so I just started zapping my friends, you know. You know, they wanted to rob the pizza man for his pizza. They thought it was a great idea, and so they did. They robbed the pizza man, and we all ate the pizza and drank Colt 45 and went home. And we didn't even get the money, you know. And that next day, I got a call slip to go to the office, and I ended up taking the fall for my friends on a strong-arm robbery case because I didn't want to be a rat. And I went to juvenile hall for 6 months, and I was on house arrest for 6 months. And that doesn't make me an alcoholic. It just shows the progression of my disease, right? I'm absolutely terrified on the inside. I'm absolutely scared of the world. You put alcohol in this body, and all of a sudden, I think that I'm something else. All of a sudden, I'm the gangster from Mission Viejo, you know, and I got this image that I need to uphold, you know, to keep you away. Because if I let that image down, you're going to see that fear, and you're going to push me away, and I'm no good, and I'm useless. You put alcohol in the body, and all of a sudden, I'm something else, you know, and it's important if you're new that you identify with that, you know. I was on house arrest, and my homies came, and they brought me a needle and thread, and they're like, you need to give yourself a tattoo. I'm like, what do I got to give? They're like, 3 dots for your crazy life. I'm like, all right. So I gave myself 3 dots for my crazy life, and then they left, and I'm thinking, I'm from Mission Viejo. So I flicked one off, and I have 2 dots now, and I'm just terrified. I mean, I'm not a gangster. I'm just terrified, you know, my mom kicked me out of the house, and I'd be homeless from the age of 17 until I got sober at 27 years old. And I'm not going to give you that progression. I'm just going to tell you a couple stories, you know. I went to Betty Ford. I went to treatment. If you're in treatment here, you know, treatment's great. You know what I mean? I don't have an issue with treatment. And if you went to Betty Ford, you wouldn't really have a problem with either. I mean, they do your laundry for you. They make your bed, you know. I mean, I wasn't allowed to talk to girls, you know. And I don't know how that impacts you guys, but it impacted me. I called my mom. I need to go to a different treatment center, you know. And she's like, no, you're there. And I stayed there. I was in the infirmary getting my meds, and I saw a girl. She came walking in. I was like, oh, my God, there she is. I'm falling in love, you know, day two. And she has everything I want. And so I wrote her a note the next day, and she wrote me a note the next day, and 28 days later, we fell in love, you know, and never even had a conversation. And, you know, and I remember Mark, he wanted me to do a first step, and I could recite the steps when I was a kid, right? So I went in to see Mark. I'm like, oh, I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, sir. My life's unmanageable. And Mark's like, wow, you're doing good, kid, you know? I'm like, yeah, you know. The next week, I wrote my girl a note, and she didn't give me a note. I don't know how it is for you, but, like, I'm, like, suicidal. You know what I mean? You know, I'm, like, really sensitive. You know what I mean? Like, where's a razor blade? I got to just end it, you know? Self-pity is my default. You know, give me a rope. You know, woe is me, you know? And, and that, you know, and then that next day she gave me a note, and I swear to God, it was like getting hugged by God. I mean, it was like, whoa! I was like, all right, I can stay sober now. And Mark wanted me to come in to, you know, go into his office. He's like, got to do step two. I was like, oh, man, I come to believe, Mark, that a power greater than myself is going to restore me to sanity. Now, with every bit of my existence, I believe that it was God, right? I mean, I'm telling you my story in retrospect, but at that moment, I had no clue that it was her. I truly believe that there was a God in my life, you know. And all of a sudden, Mark, he's like, you got to do a 9-month program. I'm like, that's a little extreme. So I wrote my girl a note. I'm like, I got to do a 9-month program. And she wrote me back. She's like, I got to do a 9-month program too. I'm thinking, man, the stars are aligning. I mean, this is all setting itself up perfectly. This is God's will right here, you know. So I went and saw Mark. I'm like, Mark, I'm turning my will and life over to the care of God as I understand him, Mark. You know, and all of a sudden I got coined out most likely to succeed guy. And then I left treatment and I got on the plane to go to Hawaii to go to sober living to meet my girlfriend, and who I never had a conversation with. And the stewardess asked me what I wanted to drink. And now I wasn't an alcoholic in Betty Fork. I was a heroin addict. You know, I didn't hear anything about it's the first one that gets you drunk. I didn't hear anything about a phenomenon of craving. I didn't hear anything about a mental obsession or about a brain. You know, I couldn't even comprehend half the things that were being said. And so I got on the plane, and the stewardess asked me what I wanted to drink, and a Heineken sounds just about right. And 12 or 13 Heinekens later, I landed in Hawaii. And I got off the plane, I stood there that day, and I thought, sober living or bar? Sober living, bar, sober living. I was like, can you really drag? I was like, man, I'll go to sober living tomorrow, you know? And I walked in the bar and I ordered another drink. And it took me another 2 years till I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would go to Alcoholics Anonymous dying. I'd go to Alcoholics Anonymous dying. And I'd go to AA and I'd say, my name's Pat and I'm an addict. Oh, you don't want to do that in AA. I mean, everyone turns around and you know, they're staring at the addict, you know. We got to get him out of our rooms. He's going to infest AA, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'd be like, you know what? Screw you guys in AA. And I'd leave and I'd go out the back door and I'd slam your door for effect because I wanted you to know how pissed off I was. You know, and no one ever followed me out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and said, hey, kid, here's a big book of AA. Why don't you go home and read it and maybe you might identify with alcoholism. And I'd go out there and I'd die and I'd walk into a bar and I'd drink. And I'd black out and I'd come back to AA and I'd come here and I wouldn't identify. And I'd make that solemn oath I'm not going to drink and I'd walk in the liquor store and get a pack of cigarettes and I'd walk out with a pint of tequila and I'd be drunk. And I'd black out and I'd come back to AA and I wouldn't identify. And I'd make that solemn oath and that promise, man, I'm not going to drink. I'm just not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. And I'd leave and I'd walk in that liquor store and I'd get a pack of cigarettes and I'd walk out with a pint of tequila and I'm drunk. And I'd come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd say, my name's Pat and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And some smart aleck from across the room would say, put $2 in the basket. You know what I mean? Fucking screw you guys. I'm out of here. You know? And I'd leave Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd slam the door for effect. And no one would ever follow me out of the rooms and said, hey, kid, why don't we go sit down at Denny's and read the book together? Maybe you might be dying of alcoholism not knowing what alcoholism is. You know, and there's a responsibility statement that says when anyone reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Yeah. It doesn't say whether what he is this, he's that, he's this, he's that, wonder what he is. The program is, if you're new, you diagnose yourself. But how can I diagnose myself if I don't know what alcoholism is? And I'd go out there and I would die. And I remember coming to one time and I was in a bathtub. I was completely naked. I was physically and sexually assaulted. I had blood coming every hole in my body. I remember coming to. I was shaking. I looked around the room. There was no clothes. There was no towels. I looked down. I looked at that door and I knew I had to walk down that hallway of shame. I remember walking down that hallway kind of just shriveled up, not looking at anyone, just looking down. I saw some clothes that looked like mine. I put them on. Three dudes on the couch. I had no clue who they were, and I walked out. I went downstairs, and there was a payphone, and I reached my hand in my pocket, and I had some change and a guy's number from AA. And I called this guy, and he said, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Can you promise me you won't drink? And once again, with every bit of my soul, spirit, mind, made that promise one more time that I wasn't going to drink. And I walked in that liquor store to get a pack of cigarettes, and I walked out with a pint of tequila. I remember sitting behind that liquor store in that alley putting that tequila back and all that shame and guilt went away just like that. And before I knew it, they were welcoming the newest newcomer to AA. They're like, welcome to AA! And I was at an AA camp out and I was pissed and I just wanted to get back to get more booze. You know, and I somehow made it. I was in Hawaii and I somehow made it back here and I'm on Skid Row and taught my mom how to Western Union money and if your loved one goes to Al-Anon, the gig's up, you know what I mean, because the money stops coming. And my hustle in the end was I'd walk into a gay bar as a straight man and I'd flirt with enough men to get enough booze in my body and hope that I would make it out of that bar before I blacked out. And we talk about incomprehensible demoralization around here. The guy that came to Alcoholics Anonymous had so many secrets, so much shame, so much guilt. Looking at 3.5 years in prison, I was trying to get in the Salvation Army. I came to one last time on October 23rd, 2002 with this dude. I had no clue who he was or how he got there. And I had a moment of clarity just like that. My whole life flashed before me back when I was a kid in elementary school. And my friend saying, hey, Pat, you're getting too loaded. Why don't you stop? I said, who needs you? And I moved to the next friend, and the next friend said, hey, you're getting too loaded. And I said, who needs you? I got to the next group of friends, who needs you, who needs you, who needs you? And I'm standing on Skid Row with a guy, and my last thing was, man, if I have to push a shopping cart, then I'll get sober. And there was a dude, my only last friend, he had a shopping cart, and I put my stuff in his cart, you know, and I was sitting there that day, and that moment of clarity flashed right before my eyes, and I couldn't no longer continue to live the way that I was living, and I couldn't imagine my life sober. And I called my mom, and I said, Mom, I need help. And my mom on the other end of the line said, you know what, Patrick, I can't help you anymore. She said, just stay right where you are, and someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. She said, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. She hung up on me. It was the most profound words that I've ever heard my mom say. And I know my mom is a single parent, wanted to come one more time. One more time she wanted to come and help and save me. And I call my mom on pretty much a daily basis to thank her for not coming to pick me up that day. Because if she would have came and picked me up, I'd have manipulated her for 20 more bucks, and I can guarantee you I wouldn't be standing here today. These two goofy dudes from AA came. And I can tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't attractive that day. This guy had big crazy hair. He's like, my name's Jack and I'm an alcoholic. And I was like, whoa, like vibrating. You know what I mean? This other old guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John and I have 90 days. You know, I'm like, okay, good for you, dude. I'm like, you're not even going to make it to a year till you die. You know what I mean? Sick, right? Sick. That's what's going on in my head. You know what I mean? And sitting there judging the good people that came for fun and for free. All that alcoholic arrogance, judging the good people that came for fun and for free. And I can tell you that the grace of God entered my life even though I didn't believe in God. Because those guys said, come with us, kid. And I stood up and I followed those guys out of that motel room. And I got downstairs. And they told me, if you need to throw up, just throw up on the floor, kid. I'm like, okay. I didn't know what they were talking about. They're like, it's a 12-step van. And I'm like, oh, cool, you know. They're like, you might have a 12-step van one day. Oh, rad, you know. And I got in the van and Jack started telling me a story, losing the kids, losing the wife, losing the business. And I started to say to myself, you haven't been the places that I've been, seen the things that I've seen, or done the things that I've done. And I started to shut off to the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he started to talk about the shame, the guilt, the fear, the loneliness. For the first time in my life, I related to another human being. Because I knew that that man, Jack, knew how I felt on the inside at that moment. And before I knew it, I ended up at Charlie Street. And thank God for the men of Alcoholics Anonymous who take the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read with the guys at Charlie Street. Because what happened for me was those guys came in and they read word for word and line for line the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they talked about a physical allergy. That when they put booze in their body, they couldn't stop until they ended up in an institution. And they would tell me their story about when they would drink and what would happen to them. And my head started to bob. I started to identify and I started to say, yeah, that happens to me when I drink. And they got to this mental obsession that they're trying to control and enjoy their drinking without having any consequences in between drinks. Not when they're drinking, but in between drinks. And my head started to bob and I started to think, that's what happens to me. Right? My mom would come see me in jail and she'd say, Patrick, just go to AA. And I'd say, I'll make up some excuse. I'm not going to do methamphetamine. I'd walk in that liquor. I'd walk and call for a friend. I'd walk in the liquor store. I'd get a 12-pack of beer. I'd walk in the donut shop, put one beer down. Shame, guilt, remorse, fear, all that goes away just like that. In the middle of the second beer, I think, I wonder what they're doing down the street. And I go down the street and I meet a new friend. All of a sudden, we're business partners. Before I know it, I'm back in jail. And I'm sitting there in jail going, I'm not going to have that happen again. And I'm trying to figure out how I can do it. You know, I drank too much that time, did a little too much here. I'm going to cut down there. I'm going to cut down here. I'm just going to smoke weed, you know, whatever. You know, it's medical anyways, you know. And all these freaking brilliant ideas as I'm sitting in jail. And I get out and I do the same thing. I call for a ride. I drink one beer. All shame, guilt, remorse goes away. In the middle of the second one, I wonder what they're doing down the street. Walk down the street, meet a new friend. Now I'm back in jail. Thinking, how the hell did I get here? Now I'm leaving. The guard's like, we'll see you next week, kid. You know what I mean? Oh, no. You know, now I got jumpsuit, shaving my head, playing politics, you know, and it's starting to get comfortable. You know what I mean? I'd had no clue what alcoholism is. And thank God for the members of AA who understand the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and that we share our experience, strength, as hope as it relates. Because what happened to me was my alcoholism touched Jack's alcoholism. And what happened for me was I became an alcoholic. And it's my opinion tonight that when I was able to accept that I was an alcoholic deep down within, was I then able to accept the solution that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer. Because I'm no different from you. Every time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it said, my name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, I just separated myself from you. And when I separate myself from you, I no longer need to do what you guys need to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my story's better. I'm different. I've done more than you. I'm not one amongst many. And that guy Jack took me to the speaker meeting at the Canyon Club and he said, your job is to greet. I thought, man, I'm not going to greet. He said, how willing are you? I was willing to stay sober. And he said, I want you to go in that greeting line. Now, I don't want to go in the greeting line because I'm the kid in right field. I'm that weird, awkward kid. And I'd put out my hand, hi, I'm Pat. And I'd be in the greeting line, I'd meet Gerard, and Gerard'd say, hey, what's your name? And I'd say, oh, my name's Pat, And I'd say, yo, what's your name? Gerard, okay. And then my sponsor would tell me to greet, and he'd tell me to sweep, and he'd tell me to stack chairs, and he made me be in service. There was no suggestions for me. He made me do it, And the next week, I'd show up at the greeting line, and Gerard would say, hey, Pat, how you doing? And I remember what it felt like that Gerard remembered my name. The next week, I'd show up, and Gerard would say, hey, Pat, how you doing? I'd tell him how I'm doing. And then I would say, how you doing? And he would tell me all the woes of his problems, Like I really cared, And you guys are tripping me out, Everyone can hear me? Okay. So then, So then I'd meet Gerard, and Gerard would say, hey, how you doing? I'd tell him how I was doing, and then I'd ask him how he was doing. He'd tell me all his problems. The next week I'd show up, and Gerard would remember all my problems, and I remember what it felt like that Gerard cared enough to remember about my life. Remember, I'm the guy in Skid Row that no one cared about. And all of a sudden, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous started to care about me. And I learned to have relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous through the process of being of service. And I remember looking at my sponsor one day saying, why do I got to do all this work, man? He's like, these guys getting a girlfriend. These guys are going bowling. Now, I'm pissed off they didn't invite me bowling, I didn't want to go anyways, but I'm still resentful, And I'm pissed. And I'm like, why do I got to do all this stuff? And he looked at me square in the eyes and said, son, he said, your whole life you've been a taker. He said, what we're going to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous is turn you into a giver. And I wasn't like, whoopee, save the world, But that's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me that alcohol and drugs are not your problem. Your problem is that you're selfish and you're self-centered. New guy walk in the door, they see that new guy, go help him. Now, what do I have to offer him? They're like, how long have you been sober? I'm like, 4 days. He said, he has 1 day. You know how to stay sober 4 days. Go tell him how you stayed sober. AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus, and what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas, and because what happened was she got pregnant, Now you have to remember, I'm the guy with no dad. I'm terrified. She tells me she's pregnant. I'm like, I got to figure out every way to get rid of this idea, and she said no, she's going to keep it. And I was absolutely terrified. And my sponsor at the time, he said, you're going to show up to every doctor's appointment. And because of my behavior and alcohol, my alcoholism manifests itself in all sorts of funky ways, And because of my own behavior, I'm no longer with that woman. And I showed up to therapy week after week after week to talk about my behavior, which is always fun. And for 9 months. And I went to every doctor's appointment, and I showed up to therapy every week to try to make that relationship work. And my son, I was in the labor room, my son being born, and my mom's in there taking pictures, which is weird, And I'm standing there like, oh, my God, awkward, weird guy. And the doctor's like, oh, my God, this would be a great picture. And I'm like, oh, hell no, And I don't know if the doctor did something, my son did something, or God did something, but my son came out, and I looked right into the eyes of God. I had 5 years sober. And if you're new, my message isn't go have babies and find God. That's not the message, What happened for me was I was able to see God through my son enough for a chisel to start to knock that ice around my heart that I had built my whole life. You know, and I was able to take care of that little boy for the first 6 months of his life. And remember, he got the hiccups, and I called everyone in AA. He has the hiccups. What do I do? They're like, what do you do when you have the hiccups? I'm like, wait. They're like, perfect, click. Wow, brilliant. And like, I don't know what I'm doing, you know what I mean? My kid would cry, and I'd put him on my head, and he would stop crying. So I put him on my head, you know. I think for the first 6 months, I rolled around like that all the time. So I was terrified if he cried. You know, what do I do if he cries? So he didn't cry there, so he walked around like that. And my sponsee was at my house, and I'm sitting there, and I'm on the computer, and I stood up, and I put him on my head at the same time, and I put his head right into a ceiling fan. I was like, yeah. That was my reaction, too. And my sponsee was just like, you know what I mean? I'm like, here, take him. And my sponsee took my kid, and I went to the back room, and I got on my knees, and I started to pray to a God I didn't believe in. Right? Because Alcoholics Anonymous trained my feet. Pray every morning, meditate every morning, and pray every night. Whether you believe or don't believe, take the action. Every time you're afraid, pray. And see, my feet were trained. And I went in that back room, and I'm praying to God I don't believe in. I said, God, you know, God, what do I do? I'm crying. Help me, you know. And I heard a voice that says, why are you talking to me? You need to call the doctor. I'm like, whoa, brilliant. So I call the doctor, and he tells me what to do. And I go back, and I look at my son in the eyes, and he doesn't have a concussion. He's all right. He has a little mark on his head. And I remember looking at my boy with so much gratitude and love for this human being. And I gave him a big hug, and what happened? For the first time in my life, I cared more about another human being than I cared about myself. And see, that guy Jack that day told me that what I'm going to do is I'm going to become someone that gives in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? I didn't come here for that. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to not feel the shame, guilt, remorse, fear, and loneliness. You know? And, you know, I'm going to tell you two amends. I hated the police department. You know what I mean? I'm sure you guys all loved him when he got sober, you know? Yeah. But I had to make my amends for the police department was when I pulled in 7-Eleven and a cop pulled in the same time, I'd have to get to the door before him. And I'd have to open the door and say, how you doing, sir? And then if I was in line before a cop, I'd have to go, you can go in front of me, sir. Every day I'm doing this since I had like, I don't know, I started making amends at 90 days. So I was making amends for, I don't know, 9, 5, 6 years every time I'm doing this. You go in front of me. And sometimes a cop would pull in, I'd bounce the other way, you know what I mean? And I'm doing this every day or as often as I could. And, you know, I'd made amends to my mom. And I owe my mom a lot of money. And I looked at my mom and I made amends. And she's like, Patrick, she said, I don't want the money. So I went and told my sponsor, oh, she doesn't want the money. And he's like, yeah, but AA wants you to pay it back. And I'm living with my mom at the time, and my sponsor made me write a note. Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today. And I'd leave her $25. And I'm writing the note every week, and I'm giving her the money every week, and I'm writing the note every week, and I'm giving her the money every week. And time goes on, and my mom came to me one day, and she said, you know, Patrick, she goes, I don't want the money anymore, but I still want the notes. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had no clue what that action was going to do. Right? I didn't even like my sponsor. He got on my nerves. He embarrassed me, you know what I mean? But I took the action, you know? And my mom didn't want the money, and I still wrote the notes. And what that allows me to do is I called my mom today, and told my mom that I love her and I appreciate her today. Even greater than that allows me to look at you guys in the eyes and tell you I love you and I appreciate you today. And the greatest thing that action allows me to do is look at the newcomer in the eyes. And if you're new, I want you to let you know that I love and I appreciate you today. And if you're new, you don't have to live the way you've been living again if you don't want to. As long as you're willing to do a few simple things around Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And that's what they told me. They said, all you got to do is a few simple things, you know. And if you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is fucking rad, you know. And I remember my kid, he was, I don't know how old he was. I didn't know. I don't know what to do with him. You know, he wants to learn how to ride a bike. All right, let's roll, you know. And we're in this park in Laguna Hills, and we're riding his bike around his path, and all of a sudden he has to go to the bathroom. And there's a trail that goes down, and I'm, well, let's go here, you know. So we leave his bike there, and we go down this trail, and it's starting to get dark, and he wants to know what this is and what that is and what this is and what that is and what this is and what that is. And 30 minutes later, we're still talking about what this is, what that is. And so we came back to his bike, and there was a cop that pulled his car down the park along the trail, and he was sitting there like this, up on his car, and my head started going. He's going to find an old beef. Old warrant's going to come up. He's going to run me. He's going to search me. I'm going to jail. I know it. He was sitting there, and he looked at me, and he said, hey, what were you guys doing? I said, I'm teaching my son how to ride a bike, and he had to go to the bathroom, so we walked down this trail to go to the bathroom. And the cop looked at me and he said, I saw this abandoned bike here and I wanted to make sure that your son was okay. I'd have missed it. I'd have missed it if I wouldn't have taken that action that sponsor told me to do by going to the door every day and meeting that cop. I'd have missed that opportunity for forgiveness against the police department because I knew that that man was there to serve and protect me and my family. Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new, it's a lot more than just not drinking, you know. We get to learn to grow up here. My sponsor tells me on a daily basis, go out there and scrape your knees, kid. Go out there and scrape your knees. Go out there and make mistakes. Go out there and fumble around and come back here and be honest. When I'm honest, I can learn and I can grow, you know. And I think I have 5 minutes, right? Yeah, okay. So I end with this story because I like to tell it. So I'm going to tell it. And I always do. I love my son more than anything. You know what I mean? I love him so much. I mean, his mom's initials are LAP, right? So I remember we were trying to name him, and she's like, oh, I like how my initials say something. I'm like, oh, cool. Mine are PJO. They don't say much, you know. So I don't get it, but okay, you get it. It's important to you, you know. And so I wanted to name him Gannon, right? I was like, I like that name. So I'm like fighting for Gannon, and she's like, nope. And I'm like, oh. So it's like, I don't know how long. I think 8 months. It's like we're battling for a name, you know. No. pain in the butt, you know. And all of a sudden, she's like, let's name him Eden. And I'm like, that's a rad name. And I liked it. She said it. I said, we're never talking about this again, you know. And so I got to keep Gannon for his middle name. You already know. And my last name's Ochoa. Oh, man, only an alcoholic could do that to their kid, you know. So his initials are Ego, if you haven't figured it out. And I love my kid more than anything, you know. If you come look at I'll show you I like 2,800 pictures of him on my phone. And I know it's backed on iCloud, but I'm so obsessive, I don't want to erase them so I can put the new software on there because I'm afraid I'm going to lose them. And this is the guy coming from Skid Row. Full of hate. Full of anger. Full of rage. Full of shame. Full of guilt. Never felt love my whole life. You know, and I get the opportunity to speak sometimes, and I was always taught that if someone asks you in Alcoholics Anonymous to do something, you just say yes, because that's where God wants you to be. I don't know why I'm here tonight. I just said yes. And I got asked to speak, and it was like 6 months before the thing, and it was at a young people's camp out, and I'm the guy in Skid Row. I know how to live in a box, but I don't know how to camp, you know, and weird, awkward guy. And my sponsor's like, just act as if you know how to camp. Okay, what does that mean? He goes, go to Target, act as if you know what tent to buy. Act as if you know what stove to get. So I'm at that Target, acting as if. And the week before, I go to find out where the camp out is, and it's in Taylorsville, California. And I realize that I have my son that weekend. And I don't know if you know where Taylorsville, California is, but it's about 10 hours north of a drive, you know. And I have a 4-year-old. And I don't know if you've ever driven with a 4-year-old for 10 hours, but it's the suicide pack. And I'm in a relationship at the time, and she's in the front seat, and Eden's in the back, and we're an hour in, and Eden goes, hey, Dad, what's that? I'm like, oh, that's a tractor, son. Right? Because I had prayed and meditated. I was on a spiritual path. Right? Another hour in, he's like, hey, Dad, what's that? I'm like, oh, you know, that's a water tower. And 3 hours in, he wants me to put a DVD in. I'm like, no problem, son. I'd love to put one in. What kind would you like, you know? About 5 hours in, he wants to know what that is. I'm like, I told you an hour ago what that was. You know. 6 hours in, he wants me to ask me another question. I'm like, dude, shut up. And, 8 hours in, he wants me to put a DVD in. I look back, I'm like, put it in yourself, dude. Right? Restless, irritable, and discontent is turning to anger. Right? Where's God now? And 9 hours in, the last hour, he asks me for something, and I'm in the front seat like this. And he's in the back seat like this. And for the last hour, we ignored each other. We get to Taylorsville, California, and I get out, and I get the tent out, right? So I'm going to act as if I know how to put the tent up, right? And I get bit by like 50 mosquitoes. Now I'm just angry, and Eden wants to ask me one more question. I just grabbed him, I threw him in the tent, and I built the tent around him, you know? And I remember getting in that tent that night, getting on my knees, praying to a God I don't believe in. I had this intuition that says, you treated that boy out of anger and out of disrespect. We don't treat anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that way, in life that way. You treated your boy out of anger and disrespect, and you owe that little boy an amends. See, there was no, iPhone said no service. There's no text your sponsor because you're annoyed with him. There's no spot check inventory. It's me and God. And I was told by God, my intuition knew I had to make an amends. And I went to bed that night and I woke up in the morning and looked at Eden. I said, Eden, I go, you want to go on a walk with your dad? And he looked at me so excited. He's like, you know, he'd love to go on a walk with me. See, he forgot, but I remembered. And I can tell you that this alcoholic will go out that fast if I don't clean that shame and that guilt up. I remember walking up the path and I got on my knees and I looked at Eden square in the eyes. See, I was taught that all I am is a spiritual guide for that little boy to find his own relationship with God, and that's it. I'm not better than him. I'm not greater than him. I'm an equal to that little boy. And I looked him in the eyes and said, son, I just want you to know that I treated you in a way yesterday that I don't like to treat people. And I treated you out of anger and disrespect. And I want you to know that I'm going to do the best I can today and not treat you that way. And I want you to know that I'm sorry. And my four-year-old boy looked at me in the eyes and said, Dad, he said, it's okay. He said, everybody makes mistakes, you know. I looked at this little boy, absolutely profound, like, wow, you know what I mean? I wanted to ask him to be my sponsor. So I wanted to give him... Honesty, open-minded, and willingness is how we stay sober, right? It's the essentials for recovery, you know what I mean? Doesn't mean who matter who it is. My little boy teaches me on a daily basis how to love unconditionally, right? The members of Alcoholics Anonymous teach me how to love unconditionally, you know. And, you know, if you're new here, I want to let you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the single most important thing in my life, and it's a lot more than just not drinking. We get to learn how to grow up around here. Thank you.